on DAB Digital Radio, Digital TV, downloads and online.
This is 5 Live.
So here we have our final instalment of our one-off three-part movie review podcast recorded in front of a lively audience in Edinburgh. Coming up, Mark's take on the new Transformers film. Hold on to your hats.
Gary and Kent, watching interviews is great fun, and I notice that Mark's hair still avoids movement despite the headphones. It avoids movement at all times and in all places, however fast
it does. Although I did something on telly the other day in which somebody sent a complaint to the BBC which said, Mark Kermode's hair nil, helicopter one.
James in Bristol, dear Edinburgh, I'm afraid my fellow Bristolian is mistaken. Helsinki is 1,062 miles away from Edinburgh. South of France, 980 miles away.
Let's hear it for the Finnish.
So the French have to give the award back to the Finns. Ladies and gentlemen, our next guest, Jimmy Mystery, is here. He's got a new movie and he wants to tell you about it. Come over, Jim.
TV show.
Jimmy Mystery's here, star of East is East and Guru, and he's got a new film out. How are you doing, Jimmy?
I'm good.
You look exactly the same as you did a couple of years ago when you came
in. I like you already.
You haven't aged at all.
Thank you very much.
Yes, and people can watch it, bbc.co.uk/5live. This is a radio with pictures.
I know, this is your new chat show. It's quite good.
How's it going for you?
It's going very well. I actually was listening to the show in the hotel, and it's because Ian is a very good friend of mine.
Ian Hart.
Alan Cumming. It's like all my mates have been on your show today, so it's been quite good.
You know, so with Alan, every 2.5 minutes, it was back to sex.
Of course, in his game,
we could not avoid the subject. Whatever we talk about horse racing, we always ended up talking about sex.
About phone sex or something.
Yeah, that's the way it was. Tell us about this new film, Exam. It sounds like a topical film.
Yeah.
Many people sweating their way through school exams, GCSEs and A-levels at the moment. Your exam is slightly different.
Yeah, it's slightly different. I suppose it kind of relates to now in a sort of an apprentice-esque sort of way.
It's The Apprentice Goes to Hell.
Well done. I haven't even seen it yet.
Haven't you?
You can tell.
Well, what are we talking to you for then?
Because I actually made it, and I know what the film is about.
But you haven't seen it?
Well, no, I haven't seen all of it. No, I haven't, no. I'm watching it tonight. It's the premiere's tonight.
Now, that bit when you do the naked drag sequence is really...
Oh, they haven't put that in, did they?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
How can it be naked drag?
It was an off-the-cuff gag. Don't give me a hard time.
It was some lingerie. No, anyway. Shall I tell you what it's about? Okay,
tell us about Exam, or otherwise Mark will have to.
Yeah, no. Well, I'm sure he'll... You know, I hope you liked it. Anyway. It's one of those films, really, that you can't really say too much about.
This is going well, then.
I think that's...
How long would you like?
Okay, 2 minutes.
There's a group of people together in a room, right? Okay, and what happens is they're at the last stage of some kind of selection procedure. To get a job, we don't know what the job is, but it's for a mysterious organisation.
Yeah.
We don't know what the organisation is. And at the beginning, I think it's at this eighth of them, they are told, essentially, there is one question to which there is one answer, and only one of you will get it, and then the room is left blank, and they all have in front of them what seem to be exam sheets, and when they turn them over, the sheets appear to be blank. The question which then plays out is, what is the question, what is the answer, and which of them will survive? And I think...
There's three rules.
Oh, well. Yes, there are three rules.
There are three rules. The three rules being that you cannot communicate with the guard at the door, you cannot spoil your paper, and you may not leave the room, and you have to answer the question. And they have 80 minutes in which to do so.
And the thing that it's tonally slightly similar to is, if any of you saw Fermat's Room recently, the Spanish film, a very good little thriller, it has a similar sort of thing, a group of people in a room having to solve a sort of, you know, a conundrum which appears to have a life or death outcome.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I mean, all these eight people during that whole time, it's like a psychological, you know, it's a very psychological sort of deconstructive breakdown of each other and how they're going to solve this question that they don't even know what is, you know. So it's there's a lot of stuff happens in that within those four walls.
And what is the question?
There isn't one.
Or is you haven't there? You haven't seen that.
I'm not going to tell you what the question is.
Right at the end, it turns out it's calcium carbonate plus hydrochloric acid.
Yeah. Well, possibly.
Equals
no, the
what?
Question at the end is, isn't that Jimmy Mystery?
Yeah.
Sweet little mystery.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's a terrible joke.
So I know, absolutely. Yeah,
well, I've had it all my life.
If I were you, I'd walk now.
Jamie and the Magic Torch and Sweet Little Mystery about it.
So your role, just explain your character in this.
I'm called Brown. All the characters are called Colours. And I'm Brown, and he's like we kind of did a, you know, great working with Stuart, the director, because we were able to construct these backstories to your character. And I constructed, you know, we constructed this backstory that he's like ex-army, possible ex-special forces. He's a gambler. He's someone, a bit of a mercenary, someone who likes to live on the edge and go to extremes to get what he wants. So he's quite a shady character. And the kind of, there's a couple of things that he gets up to within those four walls that not many people would do.
But there is a crucial point, which is that although you know that backstory, one of the points about it is that we don't know very much about the character, and they don't know very much about each other. And
exactly. They
sort of discover it as the drama goes on.
And it's also implied at the beginning of the film that this is the last stage of a long process.
And there is also the suggestion that some of them may not be who they're pretending to be. Some of them may actually be plants put there by, which is why I said at the beginning, the apprentice goes to hell, but you just don't know, you know, who's the Alan Sugar in it all.
Yeah, no, exactly. So it's a interesting, fun film.
Really. And the fact that the premiere is tonight. Is that a very nerve-wracking thing, particularly at a film festival when there are so many industry people around?
No, absolutely.
And when you haven't seen the film.
When you haven't seen the film and you're actually on radio live talking about a film you haven't seen, it's absolutely amazing. No, it's you know, to see a film for the first time at a festival, you know, it's like Edinburgh, it's fantastic. I got my mum and dad here as well, so it's the first film that they've seen with me in that we've all three of us have never seen before. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Mr. and Mrs. Mystery are here, aren't they?
Doctor and...
I do beg your pardon, another doctor's in the house. Where are you? The Mystery Family. Where's the Mystery Family?
There they are.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much for coming. And last time we spoke to you, talking about the Guru.
Yeah, and then Paul Partition, wasn't it, last time? And you just missed. It's the rock and roller moment where I missed Mark.
We're going to come to that, John.
The fact that you were in Rock and Roller and the fact that you missed Mark's analysis of Rock and Roll.
Oh, I listened to it on the iPlayer.
This is a good thing.
Here's what I want to know. I mean, seriously, and you know, I think you're a very fine actor.
Thank you.
That movie stinks to high heaven.
Jimmy's now eating popcorn as a way of distracting his embarrassment.
Excuse me, what did you say?
What was it like to make? Was it an exciting? Did it look as mad when you were making it as it looked when it, you know, when it finally turned up?
But don't talk with your mouth full.
Sorry, I'm trying to diffuse the question. No,
your mum will be saying he's eating with his mouth full.
My personal view on the whole thing was that I enjoyed it. I kind of enjoyed the. I enjoyed working with Guy. I quite liked him. I mean, when I went to meet him for the job, I literally went to his office and we sat down and we didn't actually talk about the film, the role of the film at all. We just like philosophized for like half an hour talking about all sorts of things.
Did it involve numerology?
No, it didn't.
Because he came on when he was talking about Revolver and he did explain the plot in terms of numerology at great length.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Well, no, it wasn't as...
It was symbolic.
It meant a lot to you, obviously.
Yeah, it did.
No, I mean, I got on with him. It was, I've quite liked his, one of his previous films, at least.
Which one of his previous films did you quite like, Jimmy?
The first one.
And, you know that shovel you were talking about earlier?
This is really unfair, and I have to say, incidentally... You're a stand-up guy for sitting there when you know what I think about that film, so good for you.
Absolutely. Can we move on now?
Yes,
absolutely. Tell us about the documentary you've been working on.
Oh, right, yeah. No, I've been making... I've actually just finished a music documentary I've been making myself for 3 years.
Which is?
Which is called And the Beat Goes On. It's a sort of... homage to... I wanted to make a film based around like scratch, which was obviously about hip-hop and funk DJs. This was about house music. DJing's very... and that side of things is, you know, the other part of my life. And I went to Ibiza because a film... I helped set up the Ibiza Film Festival, which is in its third year now, I think. And one of my movies opened it 3 years ago, and I went to Ibiza, never been there, and was just taking away about how different it was to... all the disinformation that had been fed when I was a teenager about it being full of kids and drugs and drink and terrible music. You know, it was actually quite a spiritual place. And I just said, well, you know, I want to try and... I would like to convey that and tell a story about that and to make a film about it. So for the last 3 years, with been going back and forth pretty much in spare time because I had no money, you know, we had no money behind us. And interviewed lots of DJs, spent time in the mountains with hippies... did the whole thing.
It's a real labour of love, though. I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's just been like, absolutely. And I literally finished it I music supervised it, co-wrote it, co-produced it. We had a great work with a couple of great, great director, some great producers, and finished it 3 weeks ago. Wow. Literally 3 weeks ago.
And where did we see that?
Well, I have a. It's in there's a screening in London on July 11th. It's in the Notting Hill Film Festival. So we're having
not as good as Edinburgh, though.
No, not at all. No. I mean, it's okay. West London, which is anyway. I'm joking. Notting Hill Film Festival's a fantastic festival, and lucky enough to be in it. So we're having like a UK premiere on July 11th at 7 o'clock. You can get your tickets from the Notting Hill Festival website, at the Odeon Kensington.
Great.
And then hopefully sell it and get it out there somewhere.
So, do your ambitions lie behind the camera?
I think so. I think so. I mean, I've always found being in front of the camera, believe it or not, quite difficult. It's not. Yeah, I mean, I love doing it. I love my job and I love creating different characters and doing it. But I'm not very comfortable with what goes with being. Being recognisable and being in front of the camera, you know.
Although it is definitely true that, I mean, for those, because nobody else has seen Exam yet, but I mean, you are one of the people, the camera loves looking at you. I mean, you are very, but I'm not saying that as a funny thing, but you are very, you have that kind of starry quality that is
we
whatever
love looking
the.
At you.
Yeah, we love looking at you as well.
I know you both are.
But that won't give him a career, sadly, Simon. So, No, but there is something about being charismatic on camera that not everybody has, and I'm just surprised that if you have it quite naturally, that you would be, feel slightly uncertain with it.
Because I don't know, it's just maybe it's me, but also acting as a talent is one thing. I've never necessarily 150% been fulfilled with just that role. I've always kind of liked to write. I've always done my music. I've always wanted to be creative in one way or another, and I have to be in order to be fulfilled. So I suppose it's natural for me to have done the documentary, to actually be behind the camera, in front of it, you know, because I'm actually in front of the camera in the documentary as well.
Sure.
It was a lot of hard work, but I feel pretty fulfilled now from doing that.
Jimmy, appreciate you coming in, and thanks very much for coming. I know that premiere tonight goes really well, and that you're not too nervous, and that your family have a good time as well, and they're not going, oh, Jimmy, why'd you do that for?
That'd be cool.
But if anybody's going along to that premiere tonight, spend the movie watching Jimmy to see him watching the movie for the first time. And when it gets to the end, when the twist is revealed, look, see whether he actually did know. Because I think it's possible that you don't know what happens at the end of the film.
Well, we filmed it in real time. That's the thing. We actually filmed the film in real time from start to finish.
You know, there's a big musical underwater
sequence.
So when
I went.
Jimmy Mystery, ladies and gentlemen, thanks very much, Steve, for coming in. And thanks to his family. We're going to do the box office top 10, mainly from Mark, with some interjections from the good folk here at Cineworld. So at number 10, it's Coraline.
Which I think is fine, but I still don't quite get the whether it would be any better in 3D argument. I've seen it in 3D. I think the 3D is good and immersive, but I just don't think the 3D is necessary in the end.
Yes, madam. Who are you?
I'm Eve, and I'm from Glasgow.
Yes, Eve, what do you think?
I thought it was the best 3D film I've ever seen, but I am kind of stingy and I haven't seen that many because I'm reluctant to pay the other £2 to get the 3D glasses. But it was really scary. I'm not sure if kids would like it, but I really, really liked it.
Can I disagree with that? Kids do like being scared. I mean, I think it. There is a general assumption that kids have to be somehow, cotton-wooled and safe from that. Actually, kids do like scary movies, and I think, I mean, certainly when I was a kid, I enjoyed them, and I've been...
Yeah, but you're not normal, are you?
No, but fairy tales, grim fairy tales, that sort of stuff, there's a great tradition of that stuff. If you think back to classic movies like Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, which is really, really scary, they are proper scary movies, and that's great. But the thing is, with the 3D, paying the money is an issue, I mean, obviously, which we've talked about. But do you think that Coraline benefited from being in 3D? Do you think if you'd seen it in 2D, you would have enjoyed it just as much?
I don't know, because like when I'm at the cinema seeing 3D films, I don't feel like I'm watching a film. I feel like I'm on like a ride at Disneyland or something. But I thought it was a bit improved, but I'm not sure if it's worth spending the other £2 for.
All right, Eve, thank you. Let's rip through these. Sorry. Last Chance Harvey, 9.
Well, I like it. I mean, I'm a big fan of Emma Thompson, and as I said, any movie in which Emma Thompson has a moment in which she goes and stands quietly and has a little personal breakdown is always worth it for me. And there is a moment in this which is exactly like that moment in Love Actually, which is the scene from Love Actually that makes Love Actually a decent movie.
Looking for Eric at 8.
Well, I think it's great, and I don't know anything about sport. I don't know anything about football. I'm very, very honoured to have been in an interview with Eric Cantona, who I hear is incredibly famous, but for me the most famous thing about it was Ken Loach. And Steve Evans, who we mentioned before, is in it, and I think he is a really, really great actor.
And not dressed as an ice cream cone.
Not dressed as an ice cream cone.
Last House on the Left is at 7.
You know, it's probably technically a better film than Wes Craven's original, but my question is, why would you remake Last House on the Left, which was a film which meant something in its original time in the early 1970s, but now exists simply as a kind of mechanical retooling of something which is taken out of context?
Star Trek at 6. You go first, and then we'll hear from a...
Well, I thought Star Trek was great. I mean, there's been a lot of sort of emails in saying, oh, well, it's not a proper Trek movie. And if you're a proper Trekkie or Trekker, I think there's Trekkies and Trekkers. One is American, one is English. I thought it was great fun. I thought it was really good. It was romping. It zipped along. It was well-directed. It had good character development. And it effectively relaunched the Star Trek franchise by destroying both the past and the future and saying, right, off you go. We can have a whole different future from now on.
Madam, what's your name?
Alison. I'm from Edinburgh.
Yes, Alison, what do you think?
I grew up watching the original Star Trek. I haven't really watched any of the in-between stuff. And I thought that this really brought it up to date with the visual stuff and the special effects, but it kept the kind of flavour of the original. It was really exciting, but not very gory. And I really, really enjoyed it. The only thing I thought was slightly out of place when you saw the original Spock, his false teeth, really went where teeth shouldn't go.
Can I just clear this up? They're not false teeth.
Are they not?
No, in as much as they are attached to his head. You know, they're not.
But they look too long for him.
Yeah, I think it's white. No, I think it's more that the rest of his head has changed shape, but his teeth have stayed the same.
We've got 2.5 minutes to get through the rest with audience involvement. Angels and Demons at 5.
Just why? Why? Oh, why?
Is it you, madam, on Angels and Demons? Yes, just behind.
Hi, I'm Matthew from Durham.
Sorry, madam.
it's better than the Da Vinci Code.
Yeah, so is slamming your hand in the car door.
The script is an absolute mess, but I enjoyed it, and as Mark said in his review, it gives them excuse to turn the lights off, and the script does have to actually explain that every time the lights go off, that it is, in fact, a plot point.
It is true. That is absolutely true.
All right. Thank you. Drag Me to Hell at 4.
Well, I like it. I don't know what it would be like in dubs German, but I imagine it would be every much as fun as it was in the original English stroke American.
Yes, if we can get a microphone to that gentleman at the back, sir. Yes.
Hi, Daniel from Glasgow.
Yes, Daniel.
I had to pay this because I had to apologise to my girlfriend for not going to see it with her. So, sorry, Jane. I thought the ending was brilliant.
Yes.
The biggest punch in the face I've seen in a film ever. It's not a literal punch in the face, but it felt like it. It's harsh.
Thank you.
I think it's good that he clarified that it wasn't literally
a punch in the face.
That everyone who goes to see the movie, actually somebody comes out and punches you in the face.
Punching your face at vision. Night at the Museum 2 at 3.
Well, again, Night at the Museum 1 didn't deserve a sequel other than because the box office insisted that it did. And it is a movie which exists only because the numbers add up financially. There's no reason for it to exist other than that.
Okay, we have 1 minute. Yes, sir. Go.
I have to admit, I found it funnier than I was expecting. I was kind of dragged along myself. But if it wasn't for Hank Azaria, I don't think it'd be worth watching.
Yeah, Hank Azaria is funny.
He was very funny, and the rest of it was a bit boring.
Yeah.
Terminator Salvation is at number 2, Mark.
Well, it's awful, and McGee should be just not allowed to mess around with the Terminator franchise. As everybody knows, Terminator 1 and 2 was probably the end of the story. Actually, Terminator 3 wasn't anything like as bad as it could have been, but Terminator 4 has just turned the whole thing into a stupid nuts and bolts action movie, and it's really depressing.
Gentleman in the blue and white.
Hi, Ben Lamb from Middlesbrough. I totally agree with Mark's point. I think McGee has actually ruined James Cameron's original vision, because now this chilling dystopia has been unveiled as this, like, camp Transformers, and it just doesn't
exactly.
work anymore.
Exactly. So, yeah,
camp Transformers. There you go. Damning praise.
Oh, look at the dust in here after this nuclear war.
Disturbingly good. Okay, thanks very much indeed for that. And The Hangover is the UK's number one movie.
You know, a bunch of guys on a stag night go to Las Vegas and then can't remember what they did. It is Dude, Where's My Car? And yet, somehow, it's ended up getting all these very, very respectful reviews. And I was in a screening in which I was the only person who wasn't laughing. So I admit I'm totally out of sync with this, but I just don't think guys getting drunk in Las Vegas is funny.
All programme we've been building up to, and it may well be that Mark surprises. It may well be that if you stay beyond the first 50 minutes, that suddenly Transformers becomes an extraordinary work of art. Transformers, one of the movies coming out this week. Take it away, Doctor.
Well, look, you know...
By the way, England's women have just beaten Australia by 8 wickets in the World 2020 semi-final at the Oval, and they play New Zealand tomorrow in the final. That was breaking sports news. Take it away.
Can I start now?
Yeah. Okay. Unless there's anything else that happens.
No, exactly. That's anything else happens. I mean, I make no secret of the fact that I think that Michael Bay is Damien, and I think that there is something significant about just how appalling Transformers 2 is, and it's this. It's one thing just making bad action movies, and as we get into the sort of summer months, what's happening with summer blockbusters is that franchising is the big thing. I mean, it's very interesting. We're here at the Edinburgh International Film Festival. You're seeing all these movies, independent movies, British movies, movies from around the world, you know, movies that are trying to do something. And then on the other hand, you have these great big blockbuster things, which are tentpole releases. They are the thing that will hold up the studio's financing. And we all understand how that works. I mean, ever since Jaws changed the shape of, you know, summer releases, we understand that that's how it works. And in the case of Transformers, My problem was very simple. It was that it was an incredibly loud movie that was so loud that you couldn't hear what was going on. More importantly, all that was going on was that it was robots hitting each other, and robots hitting each other for a very long time. I think the original movie was 243 minutes long. The new movie is 240, I think, I figured it out, I looked it up, it's 5 seconds longer than 2001, which is grotesquely overlong for what's essentially a B-movie. I will play you a clip in order just to give the movie a chance to justify and express itself. This is a clip. I mean, I could attempt to set up the plot and explain to you where this clip is coming from, but frankly, there's not a lot of point, because at the beginning of it, Shia LaBeouf goes off to college, and then you know what? Robots hit each other, okay? So here's a clip.
Hello? Michaela.
I can't believe you're going to stand me up on our first web chat date.
I just had a full-blown mental meltdown. I am seeing symbols ever since I...
Since what?
Ever since I touched the cube splitter. Do you have it?
Yeah, I have it. It's in the shop safe. It's fine.
Michaela, do not touch it, okay? Don't touch it.
I'm not going to touch it. Sam, it's fine. It's locked away. No one knows where it is.
I do.
That's it, okay. That's about as much sense as it's going to make.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Very early on in the film...
Are you twittering?
I just took a photograph of you and put it up, yeah.
Thank you.
You plus the Five Live hoarding.
Okay.
Very early on, the woman...
Yes, because you saw the first hour.
Yeah. The woman, what's her name?
Megan Fox.
Is Drake...
No, sorry, can I just say... Megan Fox.
Exactly. A real treat.
Megan Fox.
I would say, while Mark was saying that, he bent seductively over the leatherette armchair. So why is it that... Megan Fox, when we see it...
Megan Fox.
...is bent over a motorcycle in very short shorts. What is that about?
Well, this is, I have to say, essentially, at the kind of the heart of my problem with the whole Transformers thing. Because, look, okay, originally Transformers, as you know, it's a toy. Here's the thing, here's the plot of the toy. Car turns into a robot, turns back into a car. Okay? So there is a Transformers movie, as you know, there's cartoon Transformers. I mean, it's a kid's toy, and I have no problem with that sort of thing. That's absolutely fine. And then what happens is they decide to update Transformers. And they say, okay, let's make a huge, big, enormous Transformers movie. And therefore, what we're going to have to do is we have to maximize the audience that's going to. Now, essentially, as everybody understands, the Transformers audience is, you know, young boys who want to watch robots hitting each other. That's absolutely fine. It's a kid's toy product thing, okay? But in order to make the sums add up for the new Transformers movie, what they have to do is to say, okay, well, let's add an element of stuff that will attract the teenage audience. And effectively, what Michael Bay has done, I've said this before, Michael Bay is a filmmaker with a pornographic sensibility. I mean, everything about the way the Michael Bay film looks, he's like, whoa, hey, whoa, look, car, whoa, look at that car, whoa, that robot, whoa, that engine, whoa, hey, whoa, that Megan Fox, hey, whoa.
Is he from Croydon?
Pardon?
Is he from Croydon?
Everyone who says that is from Croydon, fine. So that is essentially his filmmaking sensibility, and that's how he's done it. So what they've done is they've said, okay, so we'll make the Transformers movie entirely like that, with the whole look of the film, the whole sound of the film, everything about it will just be, whoa, hey, whoa, whoa, robots, whoa, car, whoa. Now, to some extent, I can kind of tolerate 90 minutes of people going, what about robots hitting each other? What bothers me, and it bothered me in the first Transformers movie, and it bothers me even more, and this may just be to do with, you know, rampant political correctness on my part, I don't know whether I missed a meeting or at exactly what point it became completely acceptable to make a movie that's essentially aimed at young kids that has such a leery quality to it in terms of its the way that it looks at the female characters. I say female characters. I mean, I think even using the word characters is overstating the way they're used. When we were introduced to Megan Fox, as Simon quite rightly says, she is, you know, draped over a motorcycle. The bit that you miss is then that the rest of the movie has exactly this same aesthetic. There is one moment in which Shia LaBeouf, Sleepy LaBeef, Snoozy LaPork, goes to college, where his college, incidentally, appears to be entirely peopled by the population of Maxim magazine. And immediately he is pursued by a young woman in a short skirt, whose short skirt the camera follows in a paparazzi-like fashion. And Michael Bay actually makes a plot point of doing this. I don't want to spoil the surprise if anybody actually wants to go and see this, but it's almost like there is a science fiction plot point for the leery way in which the camera follows this, you know, this what I say, you know, she's meant to be a college student, but obviously she's actually a 35-year-old pole dancer, probably. And so what bothers
me... She's not 35.
Whatever, not Megan Fox. What bothers me is that you can no longer just make a stupid action movie with robots hitting each other, which I have no problem with at all. That's absolutely fine. What you do is you crank it up to get as far as you can get within the certificate that will give you the biggest possible audience. And somehow it has become acceptable for that kind of movie to have the most leery, the most absolutely Neanderthal, the most, I think, reprehensible and rather sad attitude to the way that it looks at those characters. And you see this, I mean, Michael Bay has produced a number of horror movie remakes in which this very same quality is evident. So I want to be absolutely clear. Yes, the film is mind-bendingly terrible. It is incredibly long and incredibly loud and incredibly boring, and nothing happens very loudly about 100 times. Okay, so all those things aside, and because of the way that the robots are now animated, to be honest, you neither know nor care which bit of robotry is hitting which other bit of robotry, and there's some weird sort of backstory about why the Transformers are back, because as we know, we thought they'd gone away, but essentially it is robots turn into cars, turn into robots, start hitting each other with added war all the way through. And I'm sorry, but I have now got to the point that I have lost patience with this. And I think it's not enough to just say this is rubbish and it's not. It's actually time to say no, enough is enough. We really cannot just embrace a world in which this is now being given to us as essentially middle of the road, multiplex fare. It's not good enough. It really isn't good enough. And I'm quite serious when I say this. It's not just that it's a bad film. It's that it's a film with a rotten heart. The only thing that's at its heart is a big ringing cash till. And it is like seeing somebody just getting a towel which has been sort of with money in and just squeezing the money. And literally you can hear the cash registers. They go, okay, we're hitting all the points. We're doing all this stuff. We're doing as far as we can get away with in a way which has no artistry, no invention, no wit, no nothing at all. It is just there to milk the money out of the largest possible audience in the most cynical, most dreary, most boring possible way. I hated it.
Is there anyone here? We've got 65 seconds, by the way. Is there anyone here who, after hearing that review, fully intends to go and see Transformers 2?
Yeah, there you go.
Can we... Yes, sir.
As kind of a very sort of confession to the doctor, but I will be going to see it on the IMAX in London. So I'll be getting added war.
Digital war!
Digital war, indeed.
Look at the pixels on that, eh?
The screen of the size of 5 double-decker buses will not put me off seeing it, so I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, and I think there's a lady over there who still intends to go and see it. Can you put your hand up? Who is it over there who's still going to go and see it? No, they've changed their mind. They've been shamed. We have time just to say thank you very much indeed to the audience here for coming to watch the show. Thanks very much indeed. Hope you've enjoyed it. If you want to watch some of the highlights, you can do this. Now, you're going to have to follow this very carefully, Mark. Have you got a digital television?
Yeah.
If you've got a red button, there are going to be some of the highlights of this afternoon's programme on the red button, available on the television from 7 o'clock tonight. Movie of the week?
Well, we never got there, but Telstar. We did it last week. Go see Telstar, Story of Joe Meek. It's a really, really interesting British pop movie.
Mark, thanks very much indeed. Thanks very much indeed for all the team who've put it all together. Thanks to you for coming. We're at Wimbledon next week. Full coverage on 5.
So that's it. 3 movie podcasts from Edinburgh for the programme this week. Next week, it's tennis. Plus Movies with Mark Kermode at Wimbledon. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.